It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
Well, there is some breaking news in the Senate, and it ties in with some things I want to talk to you about. Yes, some controversies involving the question of homosexual men and women serving in the military. What's the big deal about it? And some positive truths from our history about African-American contribution to American history, and some little-known facts about black and white relations in American history, along with some concerns about some recent statements of President Obama, and some trivia questions for you, and a giveaway of a DVD. What do you think? All coming your way on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Get involved right now on the passionate, interesting conversation taking place on Facebook, on our Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook. Okay, first the big breaking news. And I want to explain the significance of this, and I want to think it through with you, because unfortunately, most of us are not really able to answer this question well as to what's the big deal about openly homosexual men and women serving in the military. Why should people be stopped from being patriotic, perhaps even being willing to die for their country? Why should we, quote, discriminate against those who are openly homosexual? Haven't we learned our lesson from segregation and other things in the past? Women can now serve openly. You don't have to conceal the fact that you're a woman. You can serve openly along with men in the military. What's the big deal? Well, first, here's the news. There was a major defense bill that was going before Congress, and added into this bill was the vote to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Get the discussion underway to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which was put in by President Clinton. It's been a sticking point for gays and lesbians for years now. They felt it's ugly and discriminatory. There is more and more of a push getting voices of former servicemen and women who serve with distinction, who are openly gay or lesbian, saying, hey, it's not fair that we were discriminated against. President Obama has put it on his agenda to push for this. Other nations like England and Israel have homosexuals serving openly in the military. Why can't we get enlightened and get on with the program? This was just going to be added in to the bill, not for discussion, just added in. Senator McCain threatened to filibuster it. If you try to put this forward, we're going to stop, and you need at least 60 votes to come against us. And there were some liberal Republicans that were expected to vote, saying, okay, let's get the discussion going on this. And what's happened now is that it's been tabled. There's not going to be a vote on it. And one of the liberal Republicans said, unless we can discuss this, unless we can put this up for discussion now, we're not going to vote on it. Now, interestingly, a senator from Chicago, Senator Burris, also put in as an amendment, just another little part of this bill, that the ban on abortions at military facilities worldwide would be lifted. Another further controversy. This is going to be seen as a major setback for gay and lesbian activism, and something that's going to be very grievous to them and grievous to those serving in the military who are homosexual and who must conceal their identity, at least somewhat. Others say, no, it's not a big deal. Now people know what you're doing, and if you're valuable, you're going to be kept in. As someone said in an interview discussing this on 60 Minutes, I believe it was, hey, this is the Will and Grace generation. This is a serviceman saying, it's no big deal. We don't really care about this. So why should we care? It's one of the questions I want to get into. What is the big deal? I've discussed this in the past a little bit, but I want to give you some really important data, some very useful points from a piece put together by Family Research Council called Mission Compromised. Don't ask, don't tell. Don't use the military to advance a political agenda. I also want to ask a question, which is in particular to my black listening audience, those who have helped sensitize me to some of the issues, pro and con, with President Obama, from the perspective of black Christians in particular. We each have our perspectives, our upbringing, culture we live in. As much as we seek to be multicultural and one body, man has one perspective, woman another perspective, someone who grows up rich, someone who grows up poor, someone who grows up in the South, in the North, someone who grows up Jewish, Gentile, black, white, Hispanic, Asian. We all bring different perspectives. So what I'm curious to know is this. A few days back, it's on Saturday, President Obama met with the Congressional Black Caucus and urged black voters to restoke the passion they felt for his groundbreaking campaign 2 years ago and to turn out in force this fall to repel Republicans who are ready to turn back the clock. In a fiery speech, I'm quoting from an Associated Press article from September 18th, in a fiery speech to the Congressional Black Caucus, Obama warned that Republicans hoping to seize control of Congress want to do what's right politically instead of what's right, period. Quote, here's the quote, and I want to ask you if this bothers you. I'm not asking if you are a non-black listener, if you're a white or Hispanic listener or Asian listener, if this bothers you. I'm asking if you're a black listener, if this bothers you, or if you feel this is legitimate. Does this strike you as divisive? Or does this strike you as, hey, fair enough, he's just appealing to his constituency? Quote, I need everybody here to go back to your neighborhoods, to go back to your workplaces, to go to the churches, and go to the barbershops, and go to the beauty shops, and tell them we've got more work to do. Tell them we can't wait to organize. Tell them that the time for action is now. We have to finish the plan you elected me to put in place. But here again, this quote from our president. I need everybody here to go back to your neighborhoods, to go back to your workplaces, to go to the churches, go to the barbershops, go to the beauty shops, and tell them we've got more work to do. Does that strike you as divisive? And I'm asking for your insight. I'm not asking this question to attack. I'm asking for your insight, for your reaction to this. Does that strike you as divisive? Go to the churches and tell the black parishioners to vote for Obama? Or no, he stands for certain things and he's just rallying some of his base. If it was a Jewish leader and the Jewish leader got up and said, we need you to go into your synagogues and into the kosher delis and to the Jewish clubs, the social club, and tell everyone get out and vote. Would that be considered divisive, or would that be considered just appealing to one's base? That's another question I want to throw out for you. And then give you some fascinating black and white American history. And when I do that, I'm going to ask a few trivia questions and give away some DVDs. But first, let's go back to our first topic, gay serving openly in the military. What's the big deal about it? Why should we care either way if homosexual men and women want to serve America, be patriotic, put themselves in harm's way for the good of our country? Isn't it unpatriotic for us to deny them that opportunity? Michael in Jacksonville, you're first up today. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, sir. How you doing today?
Great. Thanks.
Well, I guess my biggest thing is I'm a serviceman, and I've been in for 12 years, and I look at it as, you know, I don't care if they serve as, you know, gay or not, gay or lesbian. It's up to their choice. That's their choice. But to come out openly and be in the actual field with somebody, and see, that's one thing America doesn't know. You don't know what it's like to be in the actual trenches. You don't know what it's like to be in the tents with these people. You don't know what it's like to be in the battle area. You don't understand the whole physicality, I guess it'd be the physical part of it, and all that stuff of showering in front of somebody or something to that extent. And it's not so much that, I think it's in the psyche But I also know that you know, if this leads to that and they allow them in the military, where which there are some, and I know there are, I've seen plenty of them, that you kind of have an idea that they are. But the thing about it is I've had one soldier ask me, what if another soldier married another soldier, which is both women or both men? See, now you get into a whole perspective of that. And so I guess that's what we're openly against. It's not about, you know, serving your country. I don't care. That's fine. Serving
right.
your country, that's fine. But the whole point of, hey, I want to marry Joe Smo. You
got
know?
It.
And that's,
all right,
that's
hey, Michael, we're out of time. Thanks for weighing in. I'll give you my thoughts on the other side of the break, but thanks, sir. All right. Hold up more. Stay with us. All right. Michael Brown, welcome back to the Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Online, you can contact me through our website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Just click on contact to get a question to me. At the end of every week, we take some of the best email questions that come in and answer them here on the program. Others, we do our best to respond to directly via email. Okay, before I get back to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and then some aspects of black and white history, in a few minutes, I'm going to be giving you some trivia questions from our history, some things you may not have heard about previously, and you're going to get to call in and win or not win a free DVD. So I haven't asked it yet. Don't call in with an answer when I haven't given the question yet, all right? And just a reminder, next week and the week following, classes that I'm doing at Fire School of Ministry, one on history and characteristics of revival, another on Jewish roots, will be available for live video streaming. You can watch them in your home. You can watch them with another Bible study group or ministry school together. So we'll be giving you more info on that in a moment. Okay, our previous caller, and in responding to the Don't Ask, Don't Tell question, or men and women serving as open homosexuals in the military, raised a constant concern, which is the physicality and close quarters of serving together, and morale and psyche. In other words, it's not saying that if you have a gay man that he is going to be a sexual predator going after every other man, but there is a certain understanding of working together, closeness together, of men with men and women with women, and they're in separate quarters and they serve in separate ways to an extent for reasons. Now, you might say, well, what about other nations? They do fine with this. Well, we're going to come to that. I'm going to give you some good questions and some good answers. Also, the concern of, well, what if you legalize same-sex marriage? Then you're going to have same-sex marriage in the military. Now you're going to have to, just another question, why not? Isn't that down the line in terms of a gay agenda? Wouldn't that be a logical thing? If you can get same-sex marriage across America, then you'd certainly have it in the military, right? Let me grab another call, and then I'm going to give you some of the principal questions and answers to this issue of gays serving openly in the military. John in Winston-Salem, thanks for calling.
Hey, good evening, sir.
Hey.
I'm an Iraq Freedom vet and retired with 21 years in the Guard, and the current situation is probably not the best, but it's working, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ramped it up anymore, you would be getting into the arena of superiors asking for favors because they were given that additional power. You would be getting, like what you said, the same-sex marriage stuff, a lot of harassment situations. It's the way it is now is pretty good. You kind of have an idea of who is, and you're kind of at odds with each other, and everybody works and goes home and does what they got to do, but I'm with you on that. That would a lot of people would leave the military if they did.
So John, first let me thank you for your service and our previous caller. We ran out of time. I didn't get to thank him for his service to our country. Just take a few seconds and explain about the morale issues when you're in these life and death situations together. Because most of us that have not been in the military or have not been on the front lines in the military can't really relate to that.
you work as a whole unit, but you tend to gravitate. You have your squads or your groups of people that work together more than others, and you kind of keep a kind of a high privacy thing when you're not actually having to convoy or do what you got to do, and everybody's kind of private like that. And mm-hmm. if this were to come to pass, there's no telling. It would just be, there'd be a mass exodus of people leaving the military, I believe.
Got it. All right. Hey, thank you, sir, for calling in. And again, appreciate your sacrificial service for our country. 866-34-TRUTH. I have on the Line of Fire website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. I have on the Line of Fire website a link to MissionCompromised.org, which asks the questions, what might be the consequences of overturning the law, which, thankfully, the potential moving forward with the discussion to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell just got set back today. One question, what might be the consequences of overturning the law? Answer, the 1993 MWG and the New Review team were charged with answering this question. So this is military organizations. The MWG convinced Congress that the risk to the military was sufficiently severe as to compel that body for the first time ever to write the ban into law. Hopefully the New Review team will validate the same findings and then list those. Let's go to another question, which is this. Why shouldn't the U.S. military be homosexual tolerant like other countries' armed services? Answer. Although policies of foreign military organizations are worth monitoring, their experiences are seldom relevant for the United States. No other nation in the world requires its soldiers to serve under the conditions that face our personnel. There is no other nation that has the international responsibilities, overseas deployments, degrees of field exercises, daily operating tempo, and frequency of circumstances in which members must live in forced intimate situations, and it breaks those down into four more detailed answers. Another question. How do the numbers of personnel discharged under the 1993 homosexual law compare to the total number of personnel discharged since the enactment of that law? We hear regularly now through the media, so-and-so discharged, serving with distinction as a translator, serving with distinction in this area, that area, now discharged because their homosexuality was discovered. And it wasn't something that they were keeping to themselves, but something they were living out. Are you ready for the answer? The Department of Defense reported in 2005 that for the years 1994 to 2003, the average percentage of discharges due to homosexuality was 0.37%. Between the years 1994 and 2008, there were 12,785 personnel discharged for homosexuality compared to, are you ready, 90,302 for drug use, 55,790 for failing to meet weight standards, and 39,454 for pregnancy. The fact is the military is a discriminatory organization with high standards based on military effectiveness requirements. A 2009 congressional research report notes that most homosexuals discharged are, quote, junior personnel with very little time in the military, and, quote, the number of cases involving career service members is relatively small. CRS added the great majority of discharges for homosexual conduct are uncontested and processed administratively. More than 98% received honorable discharges. Anyway, other questions that are taken up on the website that, again, is linked on our Line of Fire site. Isn't the integration of homosexuals similar to the integration of blacks? Why do homosexuals want to serve in the military openly? Today's society is more accepting of homosexuality than ever before. Why shouldn't the military mirror society's changes? Isn't this the same as allowing women to serve in the military with men? So answers to all those questions on missioncompromise.org. When we come back, some fascinating anecdotes in black and white American history. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. First half of the show, we've been talking about don't ask, don't tell, gays serving openly in the military. Just remember that this is not just about the right for homosexual men and women to serve in the military. I commend them for their patriotism and their desire to serve the country and to put themselves in harm's way for the country. Please understand, though, it's a lot bigger issue than that. It is an issue of an activist gay agenda that wants to bring about profound changes to our nation. My book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, should be required reading for every listener when it comes out early next year. But these things will become a whole lot more apparent to everyone once you dig into that book. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Okay, stand by your phones because I'm going to be doing some giveaways. Are you ready? I have in my hand, yes, actually in my hands, a copy of the DVD of my debate earlier this year with Professor Bart Ehrman. Does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of suffering? I highly recommend you get a number of copies of this debate. It's still at a low introductory price for yourself and for your friends. But right now, you can get it by answering a question correctly. Are you ready? So the number is 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to be giving some true and false questions, some other questions where you'll need to get a little bit more specific. If you get the answer right, you get a free DVD. And this has to do with black and white American history, a book I picked up the other day by David Barton, Setting the Record Straight, American History in Black and White. Again, I am concerned about the racial divisions in our country that I believe have gotten far worse, not better, since the election of Mr. Obama. I believe if he had led righteously and in a non-divisive way, that there would be far greater racial unity. That's my view. You can differ with me, but that's what talk radio is for, isn't it? This past weekend, he made these comments to the Congressional Black Caucus. Quote, I need everybody here to go back to your neighborhoods, to go back to your workplaces, to go to the churches, to go to the barbershops, go to the beauty shops, and tell them we've got more work to do. Tell them we can't wait to organize. Tell them that the time for action is now. That strikes me as racially divisive and polarizing and making an appeal based on race as opposed to based on issues. Now, you may completely differ with me, and feel free to call in and express that difference, 866-34-TRUTH. And while you're on the line, you can take a stab at the trivia question. Okay, are you ready? True or false? True or false? So if the first caller gets it wrong, the second caller will get it right. True or false? There was a slave ship that arrived in the Massachusetts colony set up by Christian pilgrims and Puritans. All right, so there was a slave ship that arrived in the Massachusetts colony set up by Christian pilgrims and Puritans. When the slave ship arrived in Massachusetts, the ship's officers were arrested and imprisoned, and the kidnapped slaves were returned to Africa at the colony's expense. True or false? 866-34-TRUTH. Don't let the truth part of our phone number influence you. All right, that's the first question that I'm going to put out here. We got a few folks on hold, so I'll come back to you in a moment. I feel it is very, very important for us as believers to do our best to hear one another out before we differ with each other. To do our best to get in the shoes of the other person, especially as brothers and sisters, and say, okay, talk to me about your perspective. Talk to me about your worldview as a believer. And in fact, I've talked about a cultural, I got to tell you about something I discovered on Facebook interacting with someone I had a question for. I'll come to that in a minute. All right. But I think it's so important that rather than just react to each other based on our own denominational background, based on our own social background, based on our skin color, based on anything else, that we listen to each other first, and then when we sufficiently understand each other, how do you know you've sufficiently understood each other? You can relate back to the person in your own words. Okay? In your own words, you can relate back to the person, their view. So are you saying this? Is this your perspective? And they can say, yes, that's exactly how I feel. If you can do that successfully, then at least you have mentally, if not emotionally, understood their position. And if you've understood it, there's a whole lot better chance at positive interaction. All right, let's start with Robert in Jacksonville, Florida. Robert, I'm going to read this again, and you can tell me if it's true or false, that there was a slave ship that arrived in the Massachusetts colony set up by the Christian Pilgrims and Puritans. When that slave ship arrived in Massachusetts, the ship's officers were arrested and imprisoned, and the kidnapped slaves were returned to Africa at the colony's expense. True or false?
I believe it's true.
All right, but what makes you think it's true? Just a guess or something about our history?
I think that, you know, even though the colonists were supposed to be Puritans and everything, I think they had a sense of wanting to have somebody to do things for them and set them up, because I don't think they were physically or mentally really able to do it. So I think they had to have something there in place. And I think when they came, you know, these officers of the ship, they saw a gold mine, because they knew that they had something that somebody else was going to want, because it was happening around the world anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right, so your answer is true. All right, hang on there, on hold for a moment, okay?
Okay.
And
right.
we'll let you know the results. It is true that. A first load of slaves sailed up the James River in Virginia in 1619, and slavery was introduced into America, according to David Barton in his book Setting the Record Straight, American History in Black and White. But it is also true, according to David Barton, that yes, when the first slaves arrived in the Massachusetts colony set up by the Christian Pilgrims and Puritans, that they sent it back. They arrested and imprisoned the ship's officers, and returned the slaves to Africa at the colony's expense. I personally was not aware of that tidbit in history. Okay. True or false? You ready? True or false? The signers of the Declaration of Independence, a large minority, of the signers, in fact, over one quarter of the signers were slave owners. True or false? 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, more than one quarter of them themselves were slave owners. True or false? 866-34-TRUTH. We'll get your answers on the other side of the break. All right, we're asking a few trivia questions in American history. Most of us know the horrible history of slavery, of segregation, of white crimes against African Americans over the centuries. There are other sides to the story as well, sometimes more of a northern viewpoint, sometimes stories of black men fighting side by side with white men early on in our history, even side by side with George Washington and others. 866-34-TRUTH. So my second trivia question was this. Out of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, at least 15 themselves were slave owners. At least 15, so that would be over 25% themselves were slave owners. Okay, Melinda in Jacksonville, what's your take on this?
Hi. I believe that that is true. And the reason that I believe that, that is true is we know about Mr. Jefferson, but we also know that Mr. Adams first aired his grievance with slave ownership there among his brethren. And that's where the beginning of the movement to abolish the slave trade began. And it was his moving speech that began to prick the hearts of the ones that did own slaves.
All right, tell you what, because you've given an articulate and educated answer, I want to send you the DVD as a gift, okay? But as to the exact count, I think that can be disputed. So I'm going to fill you in while you get our information to Joey there. But thanks for the articulate answer. And, of course, you did mention Thomas Jefferson, which would be the first one that would come to mind for most all of us. But thank you for weighing in with that answer. Here's what David Barton says in Setting the Record Straight, American History in Black and White. You ready? If asked to list the slave-owning founding fathers among the signers, no one would hesitate to name Thomas Jefferson. But if asked to name a second slave owner from among the 56, few other names would be mentioned. Why would few other names be mentioned? Because it was not that many people among the founding fathers that were slave owners. One is too many. We understand that. Barton continues, if asked to name the anti-slavery leaders who signed the Declaration, probably no one would mention Samuel Adams or Stephen Hopkins or Benjamin Rush or Elbridge Gerry or James Wilson or John Adams or Roger Sherman or Benjamin Franklin or John Witherspoon or the many other anti-slavery founders. Now, on the next page that I'm reading from, there is a picture of the founding fathers here, the signers of the Declaration of Independence, and there are 56 signers. There are 47 that are in a famous picture. And from what I can tell from the list here, the overwhelming majority of them were not slave owners, and many were strongly anti-slavery. Okay. I told you I discovered something very interesting on Facebook. So let me share this with you. Have you ever looked at something and you think, you know, I look at it from this angle, I look at it from that angle, and I can't come up with any other angle, any other explanation. There probably is one, but I can't come up with it. Okay, on my personal Facebook page, you have a limit of 5,000 people, so that's I've hit that a while ago. And then we started the main page that we use for interaction, for getting announcements out, for updating folks on our articles and messages is Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook, A-S-K-D-R Brown. And if you haven't signed up there, please do. And this is a great way for us to hear from you as well as for you to hear from us. Well, there is somebody that somehow was on my personal Facebook page, didn't know who the individual was, didn't know most of them. Someone just in our office just okayed people coming on for weeks until we hit our limit. And this individual was interacting with a rabbi, a counter-missionary who works to pull Jews away from Jesus. And I happened to notice some of the interaction, was curious to see who the person was. And every post was about Jesus and hardcore being into Scripture and spending hours in church and loving Jesus most of all, etc., from a woman. But she was married to a woman. Marital status said this woman. I thought, okay, this something I guess I'm missing here. Maybe she's a zealous, quote, gay Christian. But the other things she was saying didn't make sense. So I finally decided, out of curiosity, to ask. And got a response, just asked privately, and got a response saying, oh, in my country, living in England, that's just the thing that we do, that we say we're married to our best friend. And that her fiancé recently left her because she was putting Jesus first and him second, so they separated. Would you have figured that one out? Come on, be honest. Married to your best friend? Anyway, it's a positive answer. We'll be back. A friend just emailed me, fellow author. He asked me this question. said that he's seen this in numerous places, but never seen a rabbinic source for it. Can I verify, is this true or myth? And if true, can I point toward any reputable sources? Here's the assertion. Sometime before Jesus' first advent, the rabbis had divided miracles into two distinct categories. One category was general miracles, those that any devout priest or rabbi could perform. The other category was those that only the Messiah could do, the messianic miracles. These were, one, healing a Jewish leper, two, casting out a mute demon, three, giving sight to a man born blind. This is what the religious leaders themselves taught. Only Messiah would be able to do these things, which is why when Jesus performed one of these messianic miracles, not only the religious leaders reacted differently, but the people who witnessed them did too. Is it true or is it a myth? Myth. Myth. Another myth. You say, how do I know it's a myth? Because I know the sources and I know it doesn't exist. Okay. On the back cover of this book, Setting the Record Straight, which I just tried to do with one of these Jewish myths, I'm not saying it's a myth that came from Jewish people. I'm saying it's a myth that came from Christians about Jewish people. So on the back cover of David Barton's Setting the Record Straight, American History in Black and White, there's a list of people's names, most of which I wasn't familiar with. Do you know who the Reverend Richard Allen is? Founder of America's first black denomination. The Reverend Henry Highland Garnett, the first African-American to deliver a sermon in Congress. You're not talking about 20 years ago either. You're talking about early on in our history. In fact, do I have time to share the details with you? All right, let's just see how far back we go here. Reverend Henry Garnett, we're talking about 1865. Reverend Hiram Rhodes Revels, the first black U.S. senator. Joseph Hayne Rainey, the first African-American elected to the U.S. Congress. Jefferson Franklin Long, the first African-American to give a speech in the U.S. House. John Rock, the first African-American admitted to the U.S. Supreme Court bar. John Roy Lynch, the first African-American to preside over a national political convention. And the name I was most familiar with, the Reverend Frederick Douglass, the first African-American to be appointed to office in four different presidential administrations. The untold story of many black American heroes in our history with racial unity in certain circles way further back than most of us would have imagined. Somehow it behooves us, friends, living in the year 2010, to work within the body at least, to get past the racial fracturing that still exists and our inability to hear each other. Look, it's about to get ugly, okay? The upcoming political season, there's going to be a lot of mud slinging. The emotions are high already. The accusations that the Tea Party is racist. I don't believe those are true, but the accusations are there. Accusations are going to be swinging both ways. The race word, you don't need to be a prophet to see this, okay? The race word, racial accusations, they are going to be all over the place. Let each of us, from whatever perspective we have, Hispanic, Asian, black, white, let us do what we can as brothers and sisters, not to get into the spirit of the moment, not to get into the racial wrangling, but to step higher, to speak the truth in love, to hear one another out, and then to move forward, demonstrating what it means to be part of the same body, something that transcends race and gender. Back with you tomorrow.